The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
It's time to change your strategy. It's time to have an extra European Council the fastest as possible and to go for the full package of sanctions immediately so that you can really make a difference. All the rest will not work. All the rest will prolong the war. All the rest will be more killings on the Ukrainian side. And finally, a little advice to my friends in Germany. I think that after the horrors of the Second World War, there have emerged, I'm finishing, a strong and democratic Germany, a very strong and democratic Germany. But from such a Germany, I expect leadership, leading by example, and not dragging the feet, as we see it today.
There we go. Germany, lead us. That's the message being given to the European Parliament there from Guy Verhofstadt, a former Belgian prime minister, important figure in that parliament. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. We're glad to have you listening. We're here on 101.3 on the FM dial in the Edmond, Oklahoma area, live on Facebook, live on our website, on video, thetrumpet.com, on CRN Digital Talk Radio Channel 3 and a few other channels. However you're listening, we are very glad to have you with us. Well, and in our latest Trumpet Print magazine, we have several articles from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief, Mr. Gerald Flurry. I believe the plan is for that issue to be on the website, on our website, thetrumpet.com, soon, by tonight, I guess, US time, another 12 hours or so. It should go out as the Trumpet Brief, the evening Trumpet Brief, for today, so you can keep an eye out for that. There's lots of material in that, very relevant to all of the news coming to us from Ukraine. But the first article. I've not actually seen a final copy of that edition. But prophecy comes alive in Russia or in Ukraine is one of the big articles from Mr. Flurry there. And in that article, he says the most important nation to watch right now is Germany. How will it respond to Putin's war on Ukraine? This Ukraine war will speed up the rise of the prophesied German-led Holy Roman Empire. It is happening already. So that's what he wrote in that article. And that was just from Guy Verhofstadt in the European Parliament, begging Germany, do more, lead us, lead us. So show some leadership. Europe is literally crying out right now for German leadership. It's happening exactly the way Mr. Flurry wrote about in that article. I don't have a huge segment on this, but I think it was just worth playing that clip, given what Mr. Flurry said, and just keeping you up to date with all of these bits of news that we see coming out of Germany. I think Mr. Stephen Flurry mentioned this last week, where you had a Swedish journalist in one of Sweden's most popular newspapers, one of their biggest newspapers, talking about how Germany must get nuclear weapons, saying, personally, I would like to see the only major country that has taken a serious look at its history assume responsibility for protecting us. And we need to start that discussion now. And it said, therefore, the EU or Germany should procure nuclear weapons. And it was saying, well, we can't trust Britain. We can't trust France. You know who we can trust? Germany. I think it's fascinating, you know, to see these aren't calls for German leadership coming from Germany. That's remarkable enough, and we've talked about that. But these are calls for German leadership coming from Sweden, coming from Brussels, from Belgium, from the European Parliament, the heart of Europe. Germany, lead us. It really is remarkable to see these different Europe. You know, we've prophesied for years that you were going to have this 10-nation combine, this European Union led by Germany. And then to see all these different parts of the European Union, all these different European countries begging for Germany to take that role. Germany doesn't have to convince them. They want Germany to do more. We also had an article, or we have an article that will be going up on the website soon about how Germany is now getting armed drones. Just yesterday, the German Bundestag Defense Committee, they approved the purchase of 140 missiles so that they can arm their Israel Heron TP drones. And they're spending around $150 million on this. And what I find fascinating, I mean, it's interesting. It's not maybe not earth-shaking news, but what I find fascinating about this is that this used to be a big deal for Germany. They spent years debating, well, will we get armed drones? And a lot of people within the military wanted armed drones, and there was a strong segment that did, and there was a strong segment that did not. And it was really controversial. And they were all saying, you know, no, we should not get military, we should not get armed drones. We should make sure they don't get weapons. In the end, they kind of come to this compromise where they get some drones. Okay, so we got some drones, but they're not, they don't get weapons for them to kind of meet these two different groups halfway. It's a well-designed compromise, though, because when the public, when something happens to have the public opinion shift, it's very quick to just, they got a type of drone they could arm very quickly. But it's just fascinating to see that wave right on through, thanks to what's happening in Ukraine. Not even a debate anymore. Not controversial. They spent years arguing about it. Over. And, you know, this is it. This is Germany on its way to being the third largest military spender. That's something we've got in this upcoming trumpet print, an infographic the graphics department really spent a lot of time on. Just trying to illustrate how momentous this shift is when it comes to Germany's military spending. I thought the final result looked really good. It really drives home what a turnaround Germany is having. And, you know, they're on their way to become the world's third largest military power, the world's third largest spender on their military. You throw in all of the rest of the EU, they're becoming a real contender. You also saw this week Poland asking the US for nuclear weapons. They're clearly worried. They want nuclear weapons now, America's nuclear weapons, to protect them. I don't think America will give them that. Are they going to turn and look more and more to Germany as they see they can't depend on the United States? We're also seeing Germany come under pressure in some ways with its links to Ukraine. You know, we've had over the last few days all of these pictures from those atrocities in Ukraine, the horrible murders, and people are rightly seeing, well, Germany helped that happen. They played a big role in supporting and encouraging Putin. Some of the different people around Europe are calling Germany out on this. Poland's prime minister, he called Germany out directly, saying it's Germany that is the main roadblock on sanctions. Come on, Germany, do more. They've got pressure from their own people. This is just a quick bit of footage from a big protest that was going on in Berlin yesterday, just about about Germany's support for Russia. This is clip four. You can just see all of these people gathered outside the Bundestag protesting Ukraine, lying down, protesting all of the bodies in Ukraine. But I think you've got this interesting situation now with Germany where more and more people are rightly saying, well, look, you've enabled Putin's rise. But then whenever the pressure builds, when you get protests like this, Germany responds by rearming rather than actually doing anything that stops Russia. And then they can still get out to all of the Polish leaders and these protesters, and they say, look, we're doing something. But they're building their own military. They're not actually helping Ukraine. I think it's worth updating quickly or talking a little bit just about the situation in Ukraine, where Russia's pulling back from Kyiv, getting ready to redeploy in the east to concentrate their forces. There's been more and more just today, some of it just right before coming on the program while I was just looking over the news, there's been more and more radio evidence now of some of these different murders and some of these different executions that have been going on, where there've been a lot of the radio traffic has been going on under clear channel in Russia. They've not been encrypting their radio communication for the most part, so various different intelligence agencies and others have been tuning in and listening, and they've been publishing some of these recordings from people, say, I think there was some from Mariupol where it was a radio dispatch with someone ordering his soldiers to kill a group of civilians. Spiegel, this was what came up just in the last few minutes that I saw, published some radio extracts from I think it was Bukha, like, you know, this Kyiv region, and it was playing recordings of people being ordered, Russian soldiers being ordered to shoot these civilians. And you could match it up with the pictures. You could see, you know, there was orders coming in about some guy in a bicycle and he was shot, and you can see the pictures of the guy in the bicycle. So, you know, more and more stories of these mass executions from Bucha and elsewhere. And it really does feel like living out history, living out World War II. It's not really surprising to see Ukrainians retaliating, to see now there's some videos, I think, emerging of Ukrainians shooting Russian prisoners of war. And more of this death. And I think, you know, there's maybe been a certain, you know, America, Britain, Israel as well, and their militaries try to uphold certain standards and work quite hard not to have civilian deaths. And this is just yet more evidence that we're coming into a world not, you know, the post-American world. Like we've talked about, the post-American world, where it's not led by Britain, it's not led by Israel, or anymore, and so we're moving away from those standards, and this kind of thing, I'm sure, is just going to become more and more common, as horrible as it is. Another point I thought worth making is just we mentioned, Mr. Flurry mentioned on Monday how, well, you know, the Bible told us this was going to happen. The Bible tells us a lot about the Prince of Rosh. This leader, you know, we've talked about how the Bible prophesies this Prince of Rosh in Ezekiel chapter 38, this leader that would just dominate. It talks about Meshech and Tubal, or Moscow and Tobolsk in modern regions, this leader that would dominate this whole area of Russia. He would lead this great Eastern alliance, and it tells us a lot about his character. And Mr. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry wrote a booklet, talked about those prophecies, talked about his character. I just want to play a clip. I'm jumping ahead in my notes a bit. This is clip 5. But I just wanted to play you a clip. This is from a Key of David that Mr. Flurry gave back in 2017, where talking based on current events, based on these Bible prophecies, he talked about how evil this individual is. And we're seeing sad but powerful truth, proof of the truth of those statements. Clip 5.
Vladimir Putin has actually preyed on both political parties in the U.S., and I think there's ample evidence of that. And he's been a horrible example in this world, especially against America and Britain and the Jews in the Middle East. Iran is the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world, and Vladimir Putin has given him very heavy, hefty support, even in developing nuclear weapons. Iran's number one goal is to destroy America. They call America the Great Satan. And then their number two goal is to destroy the nation called Israel in the Middle East. They're the number two Satan. And Vladimir Putin keeps supporting this vile, sick policy that Iran has. Can Mr. Trump really get along well, very well, with Vladimir Putin when he has such disgusting and devastating policies that are just sick to the core and even satanic? Can we get along with him? Can God get along with the devil? And we need to think about that, because this is the real world that we're talking about. Vladimir Putin has killed in far excess of 160,000 of his own people in Chechnya. Now, that would be somewhat like Washington, D.C. deciding they're going to kill 160,000 people in New York, for example, the state of New York. And Putin's conduct inside Russia, well, you also have to look at the more than 130 journalists that he has murdered since he has been president. And he has just taken total control over the media. He just crushed any independent media. That would be like America murdering all the opposing journalists of the administration. and then just crushing anybody who in the media who opposes them. Now, this is something that is very serious, and we all need to think about it.
And that was from 2007 there, but Mr. Flurry had a Trumpet article around the same time. It was called Should Donald Trump Trust Vladimir Putin? And he had some really strong statements about Vladimir Putin in that Trumpet article about what kind of an individual he is. And, well, we're seeing that played out there. And if you looked at Vladimir Putin's career, like Mr. Flurry said, you look back at Chechnya, you can absolutely see that this was going to happen, that this is the type of person that he was. Mr. Flurry wrote in that article, "This man is not just an authoritarian leader. He is an evil, ruthless, vindictive agent with Soviet-style methods of psychological warfare, assassination, and war. As one Russian journalist put it, Putin is a supersized model of the KGB. This is a man with beastly power and with a beastly desire to rule the world. He is a vengeful, monstrous friend of the devil with all sorts of anti-God policies. He is steeped in secrecy, deception, manipulation, aggression, intimidation, coercion, and force, and there is far more about him that we do not know. What will happen to a country that will get along very well with Vladimir Putin? That's not just a rhetorical question. The closer our president and our nation gets to Putin, the further it gets from what God, from what is good and what is right, the further it gets from God. That is deadly dangerous. Putin will stray true to his character and prey on Donald Trump and America as he preyed on others. And we will deserve it for having cozied up to him." Now, that was based on a comment that Mr. Trump made. He said he thought he could get on very well with Vladimir Putin. If you've read anything that Mr. Flurry has written, obviously you know we do not buy in at all to the Russiagate hoax, this idea that Donald Trump colluded with Vladimir Putin. That's very clearly not true. But he did make some worrying statements there a while back about how he thought he would get on with Vladimir Putin. I think in practice, he stood up to him in quite a lot of ways. But like Mr. Flurry said, if he had gotten along with Vladimir Putin, that would have been very worrying. You look at Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, and you do see people that did a lot of deals within Russia. But that's the character of this man, and that's the character we're seeing on display. I wrote a Trumpet brief on the killings that went out yesterday. We're on Thursday. It went out Tuesday. I was surprised how many emails I got back from longtime readers that were saying, "Well, none of this is true. It's all just pro-Ukrainian propaganda. Vladimir Putin's not like that. Vladimir Putin's a nice guy. He's just being demonized by the Western press." And that is not true at all. We've been saying for a long, long time that he is evil. The more sure word of Bible prophecy reveals the character of this individual. He plays a role in end time events. He plays a role in fighting Jesus Christ himself. Those are some incredibly strong words for Mr. Flurry. Incredibly strong. And have they been proven by events? Absolutely. But I thought it was worth just reminding us of some of those words as we see these different events going on in the world and in Ukraine. If we're familiar with those words, then they shouldn't be a surprise to us at all. But I'll come back a bit to Ukraine, to some stories from there in the second half. I thought it was also worth talking a little bit about Israel. There have been some big developments over there. Just the governing coalition could be on its way out right now. We've had just over the last day or so some pretty big developments there, where the coalition has had 61 seats in our 120 seat parliament, a majority of one, and then the coalition chair left the coalition, resigned. So now it's just 60 seats, and are they going to be able to keep the coalition together? That is an open question. The Times of Israel talked about how this Silman, this Knesset member that quit, that she's apparently set to join Likud. And he says it gives Benjamin Netanyahu's party two main potential options to return to power. The first would be to pass a law to dissolve the Knesset. To pass this would require the support of at least 61 of the 120 members of the Knesset, which might be hard. There are others on the right that are threatening to quit, so it could be the end of Naftali Bennett's government, potentially the return of Netanyahu, maybe just more deadlock and more coalition negotiations, maybe yet another election. Who knows? But it's certainly worth watching. You've got Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump kind of came down together at around the same time. Could they turn it around together? And is there some sign of some change coming to America as well? I think it's worth looking at. And then, of course, there's just been a lot more terrorist attacks going in Israel. We had an article up on our website just recently on that, Seeing Hope in Israel's Terror Attacks. And this article points out, Israel has suffered one of the most intense periods of terror attacks it has seen in years. Tensions between Jews and Arabs are reaching a boiling point, and with many on both sides having died since March 22nd. I think this is by Mihailo Zekic. He talks about how this is happening during Ramadan. And you've got a lot of attacks. You had a Jewish man stabbed by an Arab while he was out jogging on March 19th. The next day, two police officers were stabbed. March 27th, a Bedouin from the southern city of Beersheba murdered four people and injured two women. He rammed a cyclist with his car, drove into a gas station, stabbed a person, went to a shopping center, attacked more people. March 27th, two police officers were murdered in the city of Hadera. March 29th, a Palestinian mowed down four people with an assault rifle. And it's just almost become normal and routine. And we've got so many big epic events going on. I mean, Ukraine is a big event, but it's clouding out. I mean, I've barely seen anything about this in the UK news. It's buried right there in the paper. I guess for Britain, at least, it's kind of become normal just to have terrorist attacks going on in Israel. There are just a general background noise. We don't report them anymore. But just terrible attacks and violence going on there. Newsweek had a good article on this earlier this week. To the Biden administration, Israel is always at fault, even while 11 Israelis are murdered. I think this was from the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post writing in Newsweek. And it just talks about how you had Secretary of State Blinken visiting Israel over the weekend. And he's coming when you've got all of these different terrorist attacks. But then he makes it sound like it's all Israel's fault. It says, when Blinken met with Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, his description of the situation made it sound like it was Israel that needed to be reined in. In a statement after the meeting, Blinken said he and Bennett discussed ways to foster a peaceful Passover, Ramadan, and Easter across Israel and Gaza and the West Bank. He said this means working to prevent action on all sides that could raise tensions, including settlement expansion, settler violence, incitement to violence, demolitions, payment to individuals convicted of terrorism, evictions of families from homes they've lived in for decades. And then this author, Harkov, I think it is, writes, note that amidst a wave of terror by Palestinians against Israelis, Blinken's list of the atrocities to foster peace include four which fall to Israel and just one that is the clear, or list of the actions to foster peace include four which fall to Israel and to just one that is clearly the responsibility of the Palestinians, with a sixth item, incitement to violence, vague enough to belong to either or both. And he talks about how, well, if you're trying to be charitable, maybe he was bringing up things that were Israel's responsibility while he was talking to Israel, and then he'll bring up things that relate to Palestine when he's in Ramallah meeting with the Palestinian Authority. But no, didn't do that at all. She writes, the problem with Blinken's list is not just it is insensitive to a nation in mourning, but what it reveals about the Biden administration's orientation to this conflict. The Biden administration obsessively fixates on settler violence, an Israeli source told me, and this obsession creates a false equivalence and lets Palestinians off the hook. So to this administration, well, Jews are being killed and it's all the Jews' fault, or mostly the Jews' fault, if you judge by what Blinken brought up there. And this really anti-Israeli nature of this administration, as we saw on the program yesterday, really the Biden or the Obama administration, it's really an important factor to watch. It's something you see in the nuclear deal that is being negotiated. PJ Media, yesterday they had a piece. Now even some Democrats oppose Biden's new Iran nuke deal. And just like Mr. Flory was saying yesterday, you very commonly see Republicans that go against their party. You very rarely see that with Democrats. But this nuke deal is so bad that you've got even 18 Democrats have come out publicly against Biden's nuke deal. It says, this article says, for that many Democrats to break ranks with the putative boss, the deal must be extraordinarily bad. And it is, it is. We have an article in the, another article in the upcoming print by Joshua Taylor. The worst American foreign policy blunder, two. A sequel far worse than the original is the quip. It says, he writes in that article that this may prove to be the new worst foreign policy blunder in American history. Remember, that's what Mr. Flurry said about the first Iran deal, that it was the worst foreign policy blunder in America's history. Well, this might be the new worst blunder. Melanie Phillips. This article goes through a lot of the specifics as to why it's so bad, exactly what it does, how quickly it gets allows Iran to get a nuclear bomb, even if they were to absolutely and scrupulously stick by it. I think it only lasts for something like 2.5 years. And of course, it gives them so many options to cheat. It lets them have so many centrifuges still. It gives them huge amounts of money. They're wanting to then to take the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps, off the state-sponsored list of terrorist groups. So they just want to be able to... It just gives Iran so much. But Melanie Phillips talks about how bad it is and writes, given the Iranian regime has been at war with the West since it came to power in 1979, that its fingerprints are on almost every major terrorist atrocity against Western interests, and that it unceasingly declares its genocidal aims to exterminate Israel, the administration's determination to empower it is incomprehensible. It's incomprehensible. Why are they doing this? Why are they doing this? And this article says, indeed, most people find the U.S. government's push for this new deal to be incomprehensible. Biden and those around him seem determined to empower a direct enemy and one of the most dangerous regimes on earth. Worse still, he seems happy to do it at the expense of America's allies. To any rational, clear-thinking person, the actions of the Obama administration and this administration have been mystifying. But you can understand there is a reason why this administration has made so many decisions that are disastrous for Americans, Israelis, and others. And he goes on to list quite a few different quotes where just talking about why this isn't incompetence, it's treason, like we've said so many times before. Mr. Gerald Flurry wrote, I think this was in the cover story to the October 2001 Trumpet print edition, many people can see that these are disastrous decisions, but we must understand that this isn't simply the result of ineptitude on the part of this administration or naivety about how the world really works. We are seeing the after effects of a calculated, aggressive, satanic attack aimed at weakening and ultimately destroying the nations of Israel, starting with the world's most powerful nation. This is, the articles don't talk about this is, this is a force that wants terror, war, nuclear destruction. It's deliberate. They're deliberately harming Israel. They're deliberately harming the United States. And so when you see this deal going forwards, it really, and the way that they're pushing for this deal, it exposes the nature of this government. We've talked a lot on this show about how the Bible, Daniel chapter 8, this book full of prophecy, talks about an end time Antiochus, this end time version of a leader that lived in Judah that just tried to destroy Israel and tried to destroy the faith of the Jews. And you see the same attitude, the same spirit in this administration, led as it really is by Barack Obama, trying to destroy Israel. And it's going and it's empowering Iran through this Iran deal. It really does expose this administration. So that's that Iran deal. Potentially, we'll see how it remains to be seen how close it is to the finish line. But you can certainly see the anti-Israeli nature of this government exposed. Well, one last story I wanted to talk about quickly just before we have our break. COVID update here in the UK. Story that's kind of somehow partly quite funny and partly absolutely infuriating, where over here the police have been handing out all kinds of fines now to government officials who broke the COVID laws. So these people put in place all these laws that said you can't leave your house, you can't meet with friends, if you have a friend over in your garden for a cup of tea, then you stay 2 meters apart, we'll come along and arrest you. These same people were holding parties. And now we're seeing all of these different fines go out saying, where the police are saying, yep, no, you broke the law and we can prove it. There's no wiggling out of this. So we're starting to get some names of people that have done this. One of these is the head of ethics for the UK government. Helen McNamara, Deputy Cabinet Secretary. As such, she's in charge of ethics for the cabinet. And apparently you can be in charge of ethics and not know that breaking a law that you created is wrong. She got a £50 fine on Friday for breaking COVID laws. She was one of the first people in the government to get one. Then the person who wrote the COVID laws, she got a fine as well. Kate Joseph, she was the Director General of the Cabinet Office's COVID-19 Task Force. So if any, lots of people have said, well, the rules are too complicated, I couldn't understand them. She wrote the rules. And she was fined. She had a leaving party during lockdown. Everybody who attended, or at least most, I think, that attended, have been given fines. And I'm not going to criticize those who broke lockdown laws. These lockdown laws were clearly wrong, clearly illegal. It was clearly a travesty that the justice system didn't strike these lockdown laws down. I don't really have a huge problem with people that broke the lockdown laws, except if you are the person that wrote them. If you're the government that is enforcing them, you're trying to force people to do something you're not prepared to do. And it just says something about our government that just about everybody in charge of making and enforcing these laws broke them. And just how arrogant and hypocritical of leadership that we have. It's childish, like the Bible talks about, but just a massive, massive level of hypocrisy. It shows the real dearth and absence of leadership that we have in the world today. We'll take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk a little bit about a big speech to the United Nations that we saw this week. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to close the UN? Do you think that the time of international law is gone? If your answer is no, then you need to act immediately. The UN charter must be restored immediately. The UN system must be reformed immediately so that the veto is not the right to die, that there is a fair representation in the Security Council of all regions of the world. The aggressive must be brought to peace immediately. Determination is needed. The massacre from Syria to Somalia, from Afghanistan to Yemen and Libya, that should have been stopped long time ago, to tell you the truth.
So that was Volodymyr Zelensky addressing the United Nations. And whatever you think of Volodymyr Zelensky, I think he made some very good points. This really does expose how useless the United Nations is. And, I meant to say when I was talking about some of those clips that we've been seeing from Russia, from all of those attacks, I don't really blame anyone for being skeptical of Western media and their reporting on Ukraine. We have seen a lot of false stories spread around there. I think it is a little suspicious the way the media is hailing Zelensky as such a wonderful guy when they're so uniform about something like that. It is certainly worth asking questions. But at the same time, I think you look at Russia's behavior, it's no doubt that what they're doing. But I think there's also no doubt that Zelensky's correct talking about, well, what is even the point of the United Nations? Should we just close up and go home like he said there? You've got huge numbers of people in Ukraine being killed. This is literally and exactly what the security or the United Nations is there to stop. And it's just sitting at the sidelines doing nothing. As Zelensky said, so where is the security that the Security Council must guarantee? There is no security. Although there is a Security Council, as if nothing has happened, Where is the peace that the United Nations was created to guarantee? It is obvious that the key institution of the world, which must ensure the coercion of any aggressors of peace, simply cannot work effectively. He said, I would like to remind you of the first article of the first chapter of the United Nations Charter. What is the purpose of our organization? To maintain peace and to force peace. Now the United Nations Charter being violated literally from the first article. If so, what's the point of all the other articles? Or what's even the point of the United Nations if it can't do anything about what is going on in Syria? And as Zelensky's right, it is utterly, utterly impotent. All of the power in the security in the United Nations lies with the Security Council. That's the only place that can really do anything meaningful. The General Assembly, you know, that all the different nations belong to, they can do some symbolic gestures. I think they did just today. I think they booted Russia off the Human Rights Council, which, and the fact that they're on the Human Rights Council at all, is an absolute travesty. It's not like everybody believed Russia was a paragon of human rights until last week, when suddenly they woke up and realized, oh, they seem like they kill civilians. You know, we heard that clip from Mr. Flurry from 4 or 5 years ago. They've been doing this. They've been doing this for ages. It's ridiculous that they're even on the Human Rights Council in the first place. But I think the General Assembly did vote to get them away from that. The Security Council is where all the power is. The Security Council just talks about something. The General Assembly is forbidden to express an opinion on it. So all the Security Council need to do is put something on their agenda, and the General Assembly can't even hold a vote where they express their opinion. So Security Council has all the power, and Russia is one of the permanent five members, has a veto power at the Security Council. They can veto anything they like. So there is nothing, the UN can do nothing about Ukraine without Russia's permission. Absolutely nothing. Now, in theory, according to the United Nations Charter, a party to a conflict shouldn't vote. So Russia's a party to this conflict, they shouldn't vote, they shouldn't use their veto. However, nobody can enforce that. Because enforcing that, well, that requires a resolution in the Security Council, and Russia has a veto. So there's just nothing that the United Nations can do. Zelensky can use it as a platform, I guess, to give some speeches and get some publicity. But you're not going to see the United Nations come and bring peace. You're not going to see them do anything, really, to confront Russia. There'll be no UN sanctions on Russia. Nothing. And I think we've kind of gotten used to the UN being impotent, but that should really make us sit up, take note, and... Be very concerned about this. The Times had a good article. They were just talking about this speech and how useless it was. And they drew the parallel between Zelensky appealing before the United Nations and the Ethiopian Emperor, Haile Selassie, appearing before the League of Nations in 1936. He got up there in front of the League of Nations. He said, the very existence of the League of Nations, the value of the promises made to small states that their integrity and their independence shall be respected and ensured. You know, this is what's at stake here. And the League did basically nothing. They put a few meaningless sanctions on Italy to kind of signal, while they weren't necessarily happy with it. And it said, this article from the Times said, and 3 years later, a world war had begun. Mr. Zelensky is right to challenge the UN to prove that its model is not similarly broken. So you had this League being proved impotent, and you had World War just a few years later. People flagrantly ignored it. It did nothing again and again, and people got the message. League of Nations isn't going to stop us. Nothing, no consequences. We can do what we want. You know, like I said, you had Italy invade somewhere else. You had some vague and meaningless sanctions put on them. Does this sound familiar? Might have hurt Britain and France's economies a bit, didn't really do much to deter Italy, and you just had more and more violence. We have all these pictures of these dead bodies, and they just advertise the complete failure of man's best hope for peace. And you talk about tomorrow's news today, at the very founding of the United Nations, all the way back in 1945, Herbert W. Armstrong said it wouldn't work. And explained exactly why. writing on the 25th anniversary of the signing of the charter. He wrote, "Let me give you a few statements I heard in the press gallery 25 years ago, spoken with great solemnity in opening plenary sessions. Said Anthony Eden of Great Britain, the work on which we are making a start here may be the world's last chance. General Jan Smuts of South Africa, whom I interviewed personally," Mr. Armstrong writes, "if San Francisco fails, then I see nothing but stark disaster before mankind. Scientific discoveries have been made in this war which might mean the end of the human race. General Romulo of the Philippines, this may be our last opportunity to achieve peace," and many other such sobering, ominous warnings. Are we going to listen to these men? Jan Smuts, Anthony Eden, General Romulo. "If the UN fails, all of mankind is in danger. Man's efforts to produce, this is man's best opportunity to produce peace. Well, it's quite clearly failed. It's done nothing and can do nothing about what is happening in the United Nations." And it's just fascinating to me even how history is repeating itself and how accurate these statements Mr. Armstrong made back in 1945 have proven. But he wrote there, "I do not see peace being germinated here, but the seeds of the next war." And then he said, "Success of the United Nations' efforts for world peace requires complete harmony between the big three. But if America and Britain are to achieve harmony with Russia, it is already apparent it will have to be at the cost of justice in the smaller Baltic and Balkan nations and Poland. Today we could add Ukraine on that list. And if the rights of these helpless millions are to be trampled upon with impunity as the price of peace with Russia, then we still have no peace. There can be no real peace until we have justice to all, for all. To achieve that, Uncle Sam must stand up as the stern and determined champion of the rights of these helpless smaller people. And to do that would sacrifice harmony with Russia and risk another war. Peace, it seems, can be achieved only if Russia can have her cake and eat it too. The world seems blissfully ignorant of the colossal crimes Russia is committing against these smaller nations she is occupying and annexing," writes Mr. Armstrong. You know, history repeating itself. Russia did this in 1945. It's doing it again now. "But I've talked here with officials and representatives from these nations and learned firsthand, with shocked indignation, the true and cruel facts. Except the eternal build the house, they labor in vain who build it. Here at San Francisco, I see little puny men in exalted positions setting out to build a great house, a vast edifice, a high tower that will reach the high heaven of peace. But God is not building this house." He said in there, "The United Nations conference is producing nothing but strife and bickering, and it is destined from its inception to end in total failure. Yet the leaders are pronouncing it the world's last hope, with the only alternative, annihilation of humanity." Isn't it fascinating? It's exactly the same dilemma that Mr. Armstrong talked about that we're seeing now. You know, back then it was the big three. I mean, now you've got five permanent members of the United Nations. It's the same principle, though, where you can only have peace if these three or these five can get along. And if these five are going to get along, well, the only way that's going to get along is if we just let Russia ride roughshod wherever she wants over all of Eastern Europe. Well, and then that's not going to lead to peace. The whole thing, like Mr. Armstrong said, is built on wrong foundations. It's not possible to make it work without God. And Zelensky was there at the United Nations. He was calling for a radical redesign of the United Nations, one without vetoes, which, again, Russia could veto that if it's an actual proposal. But could a redesigned United Nations bring peace? Could these men go away and build something better? That's what Zelensky was calling for if the United Nations didn't act. Well, I mean, maybe there are some changes that could work better. I'm not saying the United Nations is the best design of any United Nations type organization possible. But the fundamental problem here isn't about a redesign of the United Nations. It is the way it is because of human nature, because of individual selfishness. You know, they tried the League of Nations before World War II, and that had a different setup, and that didn't work either. And then Russia's not going to voluntarily sign up to an organization that could punish it. China's not going to join an organization that could punish it. You set up a different organization without a veto, and it's not going to cover the whole world or anything close to it. It's actually going to be something that looks much more like the League of Nations that already failed. It's not about just tweaking the design. Here's more of what Mr. Armstrong wrote. This is going back to what he wrote 25 years, what I quoted before he was writing back in 1945, you know, right as the United Nations was getting started. Revealed biblical truth, just giving him clear insight into decades of the future of the United Nations. But this is going back to the 1975 article that he wrote. The world could have peace if men in power in the great powers were willing to sacrifice selfish national interest and personal aggrandizement, and if great powers like the United States were willing to use their power to defend the rights of trampled over little nations. But men in power are human, swayed by human nature. They are not willing. And so where do we go from here? Is humanity self-doomed? The answer is emphatically no. And you look at where we are now. We're in a corner where it's becoming increasingly clear that only God can save us, that there isn't a human solution. I mean, what human solution could there be to what is going on in Ukraine right now? I mean, I'm sure there's more the US could do to stand up to Russia, but at the end of the day, Russia has nuclear weapons. They could wipe the whole world out if they wanted to. So, I mean, how much can the US stand up to Russia now, if they're trying to do that under their own strength and power? Well, it's becoming increasingly clear, like I said, there just isn't a human solution. Mr. Armstrong talked about the problem being human nature. We're putting ourselves first. We don't want, and when we do that, we won't have peace. But in a dangerous world, if we stop putting ourselves first, well, then you get risk getting wiped out, destroyed by others. Mr. Armstrong said, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. The United Nations organization will fail," he wrote. "It is doomed before it starts. And there's no human hope for what is happening in Ukraine." And that's only going to become more clear as this crisis continues. I think we'll see more atrocities. We'll see reprisals then. We'll see revenge. We'll see more of what we're seeing where maybe Ukrainian soldiers start killing Russian prisoners of war. And then we'll see worse atrocities from Russia. Reveals that we can't have peace this way. Man's efforts of having peace that for the last 100 years or so have revolved around creating these big multinational organizations like NATO and the United Nations and the European Union and the League of Nations, they won't work. It says there's something fundamentally wrong in man's even approach to peace, where they'll sit down and try and bring peace through compromise. And, you know, okay, well, maybe if you just eat Ukraine a little bit, we can have peace. Something that exposes the peace illusion as well. We have an article on our website by Mr. Brad McDonald. I was talking about it in international relations class today. It's called "When Men Talk About Peace, Expect War." But it's an article that just really clearly exposes the illusion that we've seen behind what's been going on in Ukraine and the failures of the United Nations here. And Mr. McDonald begins this article not by talking about the United Nations or war and peace, but about a new mobile phone game that was sweeping across China at the time, and there were lots of headlines about it. But in one instance, there was a 13-year-old boy who his father wanted to try to take his phone away because he was, I guess, playing on this game. He was so addicted to this game, he jumped from a 5-story building running from his father. And Mr. McDonald in that article wrote, "I'd like to think about this poor lad and his parents for a moment. In the hours before this horrible tragedy, this household was probably quite peaceful. The boy, engrossed in his game, was probably fairly placid and quiet. We don't know exactly what his parents were doing, but with their son distracted, they were free to get on with whatever tasks they wanted. So in the hours before the crisis, the household was likely quite stable and tranquil. Then all of a sudden, tragedy. The home erupted with tension, disarray, conflict. Then terrible suffering. Even today, this poor family no doubt suffers the consequences of those fateful few minutes. But did peace really exist in the house before the catastrophe? Or was the peace in that household merely an illusion? And not just an illusion, but a deadly illusion. In hindsight, it's obvious that in the hours when everything seemed peaceful, when everyone in that apartment seemed satisfied and content, a terrible conflict was building. In fact, the fake peace actually facilitated the conflict and crisis. The more absorbed the boy became with the game, the harder it was for him to give it up. In the end, all that was needed to unleash tragedy was a catalyst. And in this instance, the catalyst was as trivial as the father instructing his son to stop playing the video game." There's a huge amount of deception on this subject of peace. And you see the same kind of thing with Ukraine. The way the world has dealt with Russia has completely absorbed the peace illusion. You know, Russia does something, and then the rest of the world says, well, okay, we're not going to, we want peace. We want peace with Russia, so we won't do anything about it. And then Russia grabs a chunk of Georgia, and the rest of the world says, well, we want peace, so we'll just let them have it because we want peace. It's not worth baking the peace over a chunk of Georgia. And then in 2014, Russia comes along and takes a chunk of Ukraine. They come and they take Crimea and they take part of the Donbass and Luhansk region and the rest of the world. Well, you know, we want peace. But did we really have peace? And the result is, well, the result is the bodies that you saw in Ukraine, where Russia just does, okay, well, then 2022 comes along and Russia tries to take the whole thing and commits all of these massacres. Mr. McDonald, in that article, he goes on to talk about this counterfeit peace. And the Bible even talks about a counterfeit peacemaker. You know, God has a way of peace, but the Bible also talks about an evil spirit that whose thoughts and ideas influence the whole world. And Satan has his ideas about peace. Satan's peace is a counterfeit. It is destructive. It is selfish. As long as each member was getting, there was peace. As soon as one of the individuals' will was encroached upon, the peace vanished. Satan's peace is rooted in get, not give. And what's going on now, you know, it exposes that kind of deception of this passive peace, that we can have peace that comes from doing nothing and just giving in. And what Mr. McDonald talks about in that article is we can have this peace illusion, we can be victims to the peace illusion in our own lives. You know, we see it in a day-to-day level. He actually talks about his daughter Sage and my daughter Katie and how they can be so peaceful if they're getting what they want. But if you put the two of them, if you give the two of them just one toy, and they were very young at this time when he wrote this, well, that peace is gone. They'll be fighting over that. And you can have that in marriages, in families. We can think everything is fine because there is peace. But is it God's peace? Or is it the peace illusion, where you have a peaceful marriage because maybe the two halves just aren't talking to each other? Or there's a problem in the family, but there's peace because we're not confronting it. Just like in Ukraine, there's a problem as Russia is taking over these places, but we have the illusion of peace because we don't confront it. Now, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the failures of the United Nations, they should be a wake-up call. And we can read those quotes from Mr. Armstrong, where he was even quoting all those other people. This is man's best hope, and it's utterly failed. And that failure is not going to end in Ukraine. Man's best hope for peace has proven it cannot bring peace. But like Mr. Flurry talks about, or Mr. Armstrong talks about, there is a solution. But it's one we cannot bring about humanly. What we're seeing in Ukraine, that should drive the world to God. That should drive, instead of President Zelensky appealing to the United Nations, it should drive Zelensky and the United Nations to appeal to God. Well, this edifice that we've built to bring peace, it's not working. It cannot work. No edifice that we can build is going to bring peace. We need it from you. We need it from God. But it teaches us the same thing in our own lives. No matter, you know, the edifice that we build or whatever we do in our own lives, without God getting God involved, it can't bring peace. And I'm not really going to be able to get into it the way that I wanted to, but I wanted to get into some from this book by Mr. Flurry, The Way of Peace Restored Momentarily. And it talks about practical examples that Mr. Armstrong set to go and to bring peace. Because, you know, it can sound a bit ethereal or abstract. Well, bring peace in your, you get God involved. What does that mean? But Mr. Armstrong really goes through, well, it gets back to God's law. Go to God's law. Go to Mount Sinai, where God's law was given. That's where you had a peace initiative revolving around in this book. That's how we bring peace. We need to go to God and what he says to bring peace to the nations, to bring peace in our own lives, in our own relationships. Well, that really is about all that we've got time for. If you want to order that book, 1-866-930-3024 is the free phone number. You can email us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'd be happy to send you the book. We'd be happy to hear any feedback from you. We're very happy to have you listening with us. And please do join us again here on CRN Channel 3 and kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.